Welcome to the Property Lovers Podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Grubisher. This podcast series is all about giving you a competitive edge in your property journey. We'll be discussing little known strategies, tools, and information to help you add value and create wealth through property. Now, obviously, we don't know you or your unique position, so this is not financial or investment advice. It is information of a general nature, and you should always seek professional advice as to your situation before you ever invest in anything. But if you want to play a bigger game in property and want to use property as your vehicle to create wealth and, more importantly, freedom, then you're in the right place. Let's do this. Let's get started. In this episode, we're going to look at the four golden rules you need to abide by when choosing an investment suburb. So let's define our terms first. Investment suburb in this context means a suburb that you're not necessarily going to live in. You're purely looking at this project as something that gives you a return on investment, a yield, or it may be, if not regular cash flow through rent, it may be cash flow by flipping a property. So what is your exit strategy for this investment property? Is it a buy and hold that you're going to keep for 5 years or more? And are you intending on the rent and what you receive from a tenant being the main purpose of your investment? Or potentially, if you're a renovator or a flipper, an investment property may be a property that you buy, renovate, and then sell. Often in the same market, within a matter of a few months, you've added value. So that's manufacturing your own capital growth and not waiting 5 or 10 years for the market to do the heavy lifting. For me, when I say investment property, an investment is something that is totally objective. In other words, you don't have to live there. You don't have to fall in love with the kitchen. I used to be so emotional, I think most people are, about property, that I'd look at something and say, oh, I could never live here. That really isn't a factor at all. So what you've got to be looking at is not you living there, not a function of your own emotions or taste or preferences or goals in life. It is purely a function for the end game, the person who you intend to be living there long term, whether that is a tenant, whether it is someone you're going to sell the property to after you fix it up. And that could be even another investor who wants to rent it out, or your end market could be a first home buyer or a young family. And they're all things you have to consider. So not what you think, what does your end market think? And we reverse engineer from there. So that's rule number one. Don't get emotional. It's not a subjective decision, and you have to be purely commercial. So what you're looking at and what's relevant is what you're paying for it versus what you're going to get for it from your end target market. So stay objective. Second golden rule then is know the area intimately. So it's a filtering process. You may look at a whole lot of areas just to cull and get laser focus about what area does suit your end game. For example, if your end game is to put a tenant in the property, then is it an area that attracts tenants? And you can find all this data out there on various platforms like Pricefinder or RPData, or basically we are a data-rich society. Data's the new gold. So they will tell you, and it comes from census reports and various other means, but you can find out the percentage of a suburb, is it predominantly tenants or is it owner occupiers? There's no right or wrong here. But if your end game is to attract tenants, you want an area where there are lots of rental properties, or at least a rental market, an appetite for renters to be there. Now, traditionally and usually that will be close to the CBD. They'll want to have a lot of amenities, restaurants, cafes, a desirable place to live near transport spines, so train line or reliable bus line or some means of accessing employment. But it's less and less these days, isn't it? We find that a lot of people don't commute and do the daily grind, the 9 to 5 every day. So if you're going somewhere more remote for an investment property, just be aware that you may not get the yield or the return on investment now as you would have maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And that's because regional areas have gone up immensely in value without the rents actually matching that like for like. So for example, if you were to buy 10 years ago, a beachfront property in a remote area or a more regional area, you could probably pick that up for, I don't know, $1 million or so. However, now the same property is probably fetching capital city prices because everyone wants a sea change or a tree change, and those regional areas have become far more attractive, which is fine as well. I'm not saying they're not worth the $5 million price tag. What I do query though is look at the rental return. You'll probably find that the rents have not kept pace with the price growth. So if you're going to buy and compete in a regional market for a buy and hold property that you want to tenant, you'll probably find quite a bad yield or return on investment. Whereas if you put the money into something in the CBD or close to a transport spine or somewhere where tenants would want to live, or maybe it's near a hospital and you know you can attract nurses, or near the airport and you know you'll get pilots, or whatever the case may be, you should focus and target that area and your end market. And obviously there's no excuse now with so much data out there. What are people going to pay? Even if you have to ask an agent and get 3 agent appraisals of what the rental value of the property is. If you're going to flip the property, that is, sell it to an end buyer, you're just holding it for a few months while you fix it up. What is the target market? What is the end buyer? Someone asked the other day, do I have to have a bath in this property when a shower would be more efficient? And the answer is, it depends. What are you going to do with the property? If it's your principal place of residence and you don't need a bath, well and good. But if you are renovating it to sell to a first home buyer market or a family with young children, and a bath will be a deal breaker for them, or even so, it would be a setback because every other property in the area has a bath, then you don't want your finished product to be less attractive compared to all the competition in the market because you haven't given that particular ingredient or box to tick for the target or end buying market. So it may be, again, use agents, leverage agents in the area. What are buyers looking for? Who buys in this area? And that's all readily available data. So rule number one, be objective. Rule number two, remember, it depends on your end game and as to what you include, what you're looking for, what the criteria are, and what suburbs you look in. So it's a reverse engineering strategy. Number three, obviously, is going to be, it's a numbers game. So, and again, that's going to depend on your end game and your strategy. So if you're flipping, you'll want to run your numbers for areas where there is a disparity between renovated or fixed up properties and properties that are, you know, renovate or detonate or bulldoze this one and start over. So if there is that gap in the market, then that would be a good area to target. For example, there are some areas where people don't care if it's renovated or not, and it's the land value or the actual property. And they're not going to pay enough for a renovated property to justify the renovation. When you think about it, business is really about, if you're an entrepreneur, it's no different from being a property entrepreneur, because in property, as in business, what you're doing is you're providing a product, whether it be a good or a service, you're providing something to a hungry market that wants that thing whereby you are able to deliver to the market what it wants for a price that is less than what that market is willing to pay. In other words, the difference between what you can get it to market or deliver it for and the market price that they're willing to pay, that's going to be your profit. So it does turn out to be a numbers game for your strategy. There are some areas that lend themselves to cookie cutter renovations because people are willing to pay more for a finished product. And anecdotally, we're seeing that more and more in our property lovers community, because what you're doing now is really valuable when you're adding value and flipping properties, because there's so much uncertainty in the market in terms of timing, but also in terms of construction costs. It's very much a moving target at the moment. And whereas, you know, a year ago, everyone wanted to be the next contestant on the block. Everyone could pick up a paintbrush and they were looking for that diamond in the rough that they could polish. The appetite now for something that they have to do work on is not there, because it's just an unknown. How long's a piece of string? What if my builder or my tradie goes broke? Everybody's, you know, in the thousands, construction companies are going into liquidation, and everyone knows that. So there's not an appetite for doing that sort of work now, which gives you pretty much an open market. Everybody's looking for the finished product. They don't want the diamond in the rough. So there's a gap in the market there. The numbers work for you. Again, if you are renting it out to a tenant and it's a buy and hold strategy, you would look at purchase price versus the yield or the market rent. So as I said earlier, for example, regional areas may not fit that bill. And you may want to tweak or adapt to your end market, which brings us to our fourth golden rule. And that is, again, looping back to our first rule, buy something without being objective about it. You don't have to live there. It's just, does your end market want to live there, tenant or buyer? And when it comes to what you do to a property and how you get it to market, it doesn't matter what you think. Be objective in that respect as well. So just because you love pink doesn't mean your target market is going to love a pink feature wall. I know it's obvious, but sometimes our perception is our reality. So if we perceive pink as a pretty color, we think everybody else will too, and it may not be the case. So if you are, as an investor, not intending to live in the property, which is every investor, then who will be living in the property and what do they want? And the best thing to do is give them a blank canvas. Sell them the dream or the idea, and you don't want to be putting things in their vision that's going to just derail them. So take away any personal touches, any colours, anything that you think may be nice, and you want it to appeal to the maximum number of people in your end demographic. So usually whites or neutral colours are far better, so they can impress their own personality or their own dream onto the property. Also, what are they looking for? Sometimes people want a furnished property. I know that post GFC, with many of our properties, we found a real niche for executive rentals. So that was walk in, walk out, just give us a key, we want the furnished end product. And we found that we could equip an apartment a bit like Airbnb by just going to IKEA, getting everything, and you know, for a few thousand dollars, you could have it all ready to go. And you could charge a few hundred dollars more a week rent in that market if it was a furnished executive rental. So look at what the end market wants and deliver that to them in the value that you're adding and how you're presenting that investment property. Do they want a bath? There are some areas where buyers will differentiate between an electric stovetop and a gas stovetop. It gets that granular. So really do a lot of research, talk to a lot of agents, go to open for inspections, see who's turning up at similar properties. And if there's one that has 20, 30 people all coming through as opposed to two or three, listen to what they're all saying. Oh, this one, the bathroom's too small. Oh, it's only got one living area. Do people want two living areas? And ask questions. Ask lots of questions of agents. and you do that, the time to do it is A, before you buy, best case scenario, but B, before you spend any money getting the property ready for your end market. So it all starts with choosing the right area where you're going to do your hunting for a property. And that comes down to being an area expert, a topic that we'll cover in another podcast, where to actually aim your lens or your scope before you pull the trigger. So if you want to know more about property trading for profit in terms of either buy and hold for rental yield or flipping properties, adding value, or even property development or uplift, have a look at the link below where I walk you through step by step how you can profit at the time when you acquire properties in this market. So we'll put that link in the comment section and in the description section, and let us know your thoughts when it comes to investing in property. If you're enjoying this podcast, we want to invite you to join the Property Lovers Facebook group. To find the group in Facebook, just search for Property Lovers. You'll see the group banner, which has the word Property Lovers Hub on it. It's a community for property lovers in Australia, and just like this podcast, it's been created to give you a competitive advantage so you can get superior results in property. Please come and join us today. That's it for today, but really looking forward to giving you more tools, more strategies, more support, and a competitive advantage when it comes to property in our next episode.